As Dorian heads towards the U.S., the death toll from the storm rises.
We are in the midst of a historic tragedy.
We'll have a look at if the hurricane category system needs to be revised.
When we get a storm like Dorian, which is pretty historic, it often prompts discussion about whether we need a higher rating for storms.
Plus, the chances of a general election grow as British lawmakers enter a crucial week for Brexit. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we give you an update on the latest with Hurricane Dorian, including a look at whether the traditional hurricane category rating system needs to be changed, here's what you missed. Dozens of people are feared dead after a fire yesterday destroyed a diving boat in Southern California. It's an event that's likely to rank among the worst maritime tragedies in recent years in the U.S. Here's Sheriff Bill Brown from Santa Barbara County.
The majority of the people were the passengers on the ship. And the sleeping compartment was on the bottom deck of the ship, so they would have been sound asleep when this fire started. So you can imagine that of all scenarios, to be in a remote location, have a fire that occurs, have limited, if any, firefighting capabilities that could address that, and then to have all of a sudden a fire that spread very, very rapidly, you couldn't ask for a worse situation.
Officials said they were now working to stabilize the sunken boat and search for the remaining passengers. They're also investigating what caused the fire and what prevented most of the 39 people on board from escaping. And Brexit battle lines hardened yesterday after British Prime Minister Boris Johnson warned members of his own party to reject a motion that's expected to be put to lawmakers today. The motion includes a proposal that could lead to another delay to the Brexit process. Here's what he had to say as protesters shouted, quote, "Stop the coup" in the background.
I don't want an election. You don't want an election. Let's get on with the people's agenda and let's get Brexit done by October the 31st.
Max Colchester is in London. He explains just what's at stake today and this week.
Well, today is another crazy day in British politics. Lawmakers are expected to try and revolt against Boris Johnson's plans to get the UK out of the EU on October 31st, even if it means leaving without a deal. They're planning to try and do this by forcing through legislation in Parliament that would effectively bind Mr. Johnson's hands, forcing him to go to the EU and ask for an extension to these Brexit negotiations beyond that October deadline. Mr. Johnson's responded to this by saying if lawmakers go down this path, he will have no choice but to call an election. But as with British politics, nothing is simple. Even if Mr. Johnson does want to call an election, he will need a majority of lawmakers, probably two-thirds of lawmakers, to vote in favour of one. And it's not at all clear that lawmakers will even do that. So we could be heading into another day of Brexit limbo in Britain's Parliament.
We'll have the latest coverage of today's key votes up on our website. Now, our main story this morning, Hurricane Dorian. It crawled over Grand Bahama Island yesterday after tearing through the Abaco Islands. Prime Minister Hubert Minnis said police had confirmed at least 5 people had been killed as a result of the storm.
We are in the midst of a historic tragedy in parts of northern Bahamas. Our mission and focus now is search, rescue, and recovery. I ask for your prayers for those in affected areas and for our first responders.
The powerful storm is now expected near Florida later today. To find out more about Dorian, including why the path of the storm has been so hard to predict, as well as a new debate about whether the category system used to rank hurricanes needs to be revised, I rang up Erin Aylworth. She's our natural disaster correspondent.
I cover hurricanes, wildfires, tornadoes.
So what do we know about the impact that Dorian's had on the Bahamas?
So the damage in the Bahamas that we know about right now is that about 13,000 homes may have been damaged or destroyed. And that has meant that a lot of people are in shelters on the islands.
And where is it headed next?
Well, so the storm is expected to approach what forecasters are saying will be dangerously close to the Florida coast, and then it will head up the coastline, sort of paralleling it, they think, past Georgia and into the Carolinas.
Why has it been so hard to track this storm?
It's really hard to track because the hurricane is moved by other forces, wind currents, high and low pressure systems that sort of bat it around. So it's at the mercy of those things. And any minute change in those conditions can affect where it will go.
Even if it's been hard to track, there are some hints from the past. You talked about one hurricane in particular.
Sure. One of the ones that people have been most reminded of watching Dorian is Hurricane Matthew from 2016, which had a very similar path. It approached Florida. It remained offshore. It went up toward Georgia and into the Carolinas. It made landfall in South Carolina as a Category 1, but it still managed to do a lot of damage before it made that landfall. It's close to 11 billion, and it was also a deadly storm. It killed 49 people.
Oof, let's hope that doesn't happen this time around. Let's also talk a little bit about something else you've highlighted, this ranking system for hurricanes. Dorian was a Category 5. It's since been downgraded from that max level. But you talk a little bit about a debate that's come as a result of this hurricane.
So Category 5 is basically, as you mentioned, the highest rating. And it's defined as causing catastrophic damage. Now, when we get a storm like Dorian, which is pretty historic, it's very intense, it often prompts discussion about whether we need a higher rating for storms. Meteorologists, though, are basically of the mind that you can't really get anything worse than catastrophic damage. But they say it's worthwhile to talk about how we describe storms and how we relay what their risks are, because the category really only talks about a hurricane's sustained wind speed. And there are so many other risks. There are risks from rainfall and flooding. There are risks from storm surge and riptides, all of that kind of stuff. And so people, they say, shouldn't just look at a storm's category and say, oh, it's a category 3, not a 5, so I'll stick around. What they really need to consider is where they live, whether they might be in the path of that storm surge or that flooding if it occurs, and, you know, factor those things in when they're making the decisions about when to evacuate, whether to evacuate, that kind of thing.
So what do you think is the main takeaway from current forecasts?
Forecasters, emergency officials, they're all warning people that they need to remain alert. Just because the storm's center is not going to hit land, at least as it's currently forecast along the U.S., doesn't mean that its effects won't be felt. I mean, this is a large storm, so its winds and the storm surge that it sends into the coast, could still be significant.
You can find our ongoing coverage of Hurricane Dorian up on WSJ.com. On to markets. China's yuan dropped to its weakest level in more than a decade this morning. It comes after President Trump announced tariffs on a wider range of Chinese goods. Quentin Webb has more.
So the yuan is continuing to weaken. It is now nearing 7.2 per dollar. That is less than a month after it first crossed this previously taboo threshold of 7 per dollar. That was a level that the Chinese authorities had up until then defended, because partly they were worried about angering the United States, and partly because they didn't want to provoke a sort of self-fulfilling cycle of weaker currency and capital flowing offshore. Now that they've gone through that level, what they're doing is effectively tapping the brakes. So every day they set a reference price for trading of the currency onshore, and they've been setting that reference price using a bit of discretion, setting it a bit stronger than you might expect if you just looked at market prices. And that's effectively a way of saying to the market, this is okay, we're happy to see the currency depreciate a bit, but we don't want this to be too quick.
And now the SCED. Here's what else we're paying attention to today. The death toll from a shooting rampage in West Texas rose to 7. Officials said the gunman was fired from his job and called 911 and the FBI tip line in the hours before opening fire in and around the West Texas city of Odessa on Saturday. Here's Chief Michael Gerke of the Odessa Police.
So Saturday morning, our suspect went to work at Journey Oil Field Service. He was there for a short time and was terminated by his employer. Right after that firing, he called 911, Odessa Police Department's 911, and so did his employer. And basically, they were complaining on each other because they had a disagreement over the firing.
In addition to the 7 killed, 22 others were injured in the shooting. Those killed ranged in age from 15 to 57. And when you think of gambling, chances are you've got images of Las Vegas's slot machines in your mind. But here's a stat for you. New Jersey recently beat Nevada, at least when it comes to online sports betting. We report that online gamblers now account for about 80% of all legal wagers on games in New Jersey. It surpassed Nevada for the first time in May in monthly sports bets. New Jersey legalized sports betting last year in the wake of a Supreme Court ruling. However, we're reporting that limits in other states might hamper the nascent industry's growth. Finally, today is the first day of school in many parts of the country. We report that cell phone usage in class has gotten so out of hand that now some schools are confiscating students' phones. Our family and tech columnist Julie Jargon says parents are partly to blame.
A lot of schools have noticed that kids are on their phones all day long, either in class or between classes or at lunch. And they kind of thought, you know, kids are busy texting each other, busy posting to Instagram and Snapchat, but a lot of times it's the parents of these kids who are texting their kids during the school day. These are not emergencies. These are things that, you know, like your brother's going to pick you up from school this afternoon, or you've got an orthodontist appointment after school. Don't forget, kind of reminders and just how was your test, those kind of things, things that end up being really distracting to the kids during the day and that really aren't necessary.
We want to know, do you think students should have access to cell phones during the school day? Let us know. Tweet us at WSJ Podcast or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. Your comments may be used in follow-up reporting. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.